CliffCentral.com.
One Direction and Drag Me Down. I hope you're having a happy Wednesday today. It's a short four-day week, so even if you're not having the best Wednesday, before you even know what's going on, it'll all have been over. This is going to be the last short week for a while. Like Mabale said to me yesterday, she said, oh, we're going to suffer next week. Five-day week.
It's all in our heads, but yes, it's going to feel a lot longer next week.
All right, here's a quick message before we get into news, one or two of these. Yonda says, I was listening yesterday to the talk about dreams. I often dream about far-fetched things and quite vivid, and at most times, when I'm at peace, I dream of things that come true in a few days or so. That's maybe you're powerful, Yonda. I mean, you know, there are those people who say they can manifest their dreams. So would you dream about all of us having lots of money and fancy houses and fancy cars and being able to buy anything we want in the Mall of Africa?
Also throw in there that I want to age like Jennifer Lopez.
Very nice. All right, Yonda, you got the list? Good. Greg says, good morning. Great interview yesterday about gangs in Cape Town. I'm getting that book. Keep up the interesting content. I have family on the Cape Flats, and it's amazing what they go through. And it is their reality. Yeah, sure. That was that was very harrowing stuff. This guy called Don Pinnock has written a book called Gang Town. And if you missed that yesterday, it's all about how the gangs work, who the gangs are, how these gangsters start off at like a really young age, and just how everything is broken down then. And, by the way, before you get all depressed, how we can fix it. At least he's got a solution, you know. Then Sifred says that guy's locked in a basement. Done for. Which guy?
I don't know.
Guy's locked in a basement. Just clear that up for me. I don't know what you're talking about, man. Fill me in. All right, let's get straight into it. News time with Mubs. Let's see what's going on in the world. Here's your opportunity to catch up on all the things that you might not have paid attention to for the last few days. Mubs has the entire list.
Ta-da. All right, when last did you hear from Shabir Sheikh?
He's so quiet.
Yeah. He has been quiet.
It's almost like he's hiding something.
He's on a very strict golf program, remember, because that's very necessary for his ailing health.
Yeah.
But he has resurfaced. He was talking to the Daily News newspaper in Durban.
All right.
And basically, he said that if the president gets called in to face up to corruption, fraud, and racketeering charges, Shabir Sheikh is willing to testify.
Against him?
Well, no.
Mm-hmm.
Sheikh served 28 months of a 15-year jail sentence for fraud and corruption related to the arms deal before being granted medical parole due to a terminal illness.
Now, that really doesn't seem fair. How many months did he serve?
28 months of a 15-year jail sentence.
Hey, that's 2 years.
He told the Daily News newspaper that he welcomed the fact that the president may get his day in court and he is willing and ready to testify.
Mm-hmm.
He said this, there's been a well-planned strategy to discredit the president and myself by certain members within our organization, the ANC. I have always stated that President Zuma was never involved in the arms procurement deal or influenced any company, including my own, to win or lose any tender. So no, Shabir Sheikh is not testifying against the president. He says that no, that's just a well-executed strategy to try and discredit them. So he wants to set the record straight.
Sure, okay.
A full bench of the High Court in Pretoria last week set aside a decision by former NPA head Mokotedi Mche not to prosecute the president in April 2009.
Yeah, that must. I mean, surely Mokotedi Mche has got to be a little bit embarrassed about that. Like, he made a bad call, and there's just no, he doesn't have to bear any of the responsibility for that.
No, that's somebody else's mess to clean up.
What's Mokhotedi Mshe doing now? Does anyone know?
Yeah.
I wonder if anybody even knows. Like, he was a major, he was the head of the NPA at that stage. And he made this call that was a very bad call. I mean, the court's just, the Constitutional Court, right? Or is it the Supreme Court of Appeal? Or is it just the High Court of Gauteng? Either way, one of the courts decided that these fraud charges need to be reinstated. Now, surely Mokhotedi Mshe's got some responsibility here. Like, even if he's moved on, he's got a new job. Maybe he's doing something totally different. Like, when you screw up that badly, there's got to be some repercussion, right?
I don't know what he's currently doing, but the mini biog that I'm reading here has a nickname for Mokhotedi Mshe: Cocky.
Really? That's
I don't know if that's an official nickname or if that's just something people started calling him and it stuck.
Cocky, huh?
Yeah, his nickname is Cocky.
Well, it could be worse.
Yeah, Shabir Sheikh. Oh, gosh, I wonder what he has been doing.
I think he's been doing whatever he wants.
Of course.
That's what I think.
Yeah. And remember the 28 months that he served, did he do that in a, in a normal facility, or was it some kind of nice setup specifically for him where he was isolated from everyone else? I can't remember the details now. Was he in an actual correctional facility?
Most of the time he was in a hospital room, I heard.
I remember that.
Yeah. I don't know how many days he actually spent in jail.
Yeah, I don't think he served all 28 months behind actual bars.
Oh, here we go. Mshe is an acting high court judge in Pretoria.
Acting?
Hmm.
Okay.
All right. So he's still on the state payroll. Suppose you make bad decisions and, you get rewarded. Here's a judge, a position on the bench for you. Okay.
Take it. It's yours.
Sure. Thanks for your help. Bye-bye. Have a fun time.
Are you a procrastinator?
Oh, of course.
Are you, though? Seriously?
No. No. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Of course.
All right, yeah. I think a lot of us are. But have you ever wondered why it is that we procrastinate? Okay, you're procrastinating. I'm going to move on.
It's like because we don't want to do something, so we try to stall it. Like, you don't want to study, you procrastinate.
Yeah, it's because you really don't want to do something, but you know you got to do it.
Yeah.
Okay, so for a lot of us, procrastination is a strong and mysterious force that keeps us from completing the most urgent and important tasks. It is also a potentially dangerous force, causing victims to fail out of school, to perform poorly at work, put off medical treatment, or delay saving for retirement. So it really creeps into every aspect of your life. A case study by Western University from 1997 found that college-age procrastinators ended up with higher stress levels, more illness, and lower grades by the end of the semester. So firstly, if you procrastinate, it's not good for your health. It manifests physically in the form of stress. You become more ill, so that's the first thing.
There are going to be a lot of people in business who end up with ulcers and stresses and all kinds of things. Don't procrastinate. Just make the decision and get on with it.
Don't procrastinate. Now, the reasons that we procrastinate are still not understood that well. Some researchers have viewed procrastination largely as a failure of self-regulation. Like other bad behaviors that have to do with a lack of self-control. So, for example, when you overeat, you know very well you're not supposed to be doing that, but you do it anyway because of a failure to self-regulate. If you develop a gambling problem or if you overspend. So this is what some researchers are saying, is that procrastination, it's basically the same thing. It's your failure to self-regulate.
Yeah.
Other researchers say that it's not a matter of being lazy or poor time management. They say it may actually be linked to how our brain works.
Brains.
Everything is always...
Brains.
Worked right back to the brain.
Brains.
So how exactly procrastination works and how to stop it? Most psychologists see procrastination as a kind of avoidance behavior. It's a coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes the task at hand is causing you anxiety and you get all worked up about it and you're stressed about it. Maybe you are worried that you're not going to be able to execute the task well. Maybe the task requires a lot of responsibility on your part, and you get yourself all worked up. And some psychological research suggests that procrastination then creeps in because it's a kind of coping mechanism. So you distract yourself. You're like, okay, you know what? I can't deal with this right now. Let me rather mess around on Twitter or on Pinterest. Let me rather go out for lunch, and then I'll deal with this problem later.
And you hope it, you sort of hope it'll go away.
You sort of hope it will go away, but of course it never goes away. So that is one of the suggestions, is that procrastination is actually just a coping mechanism. Yeah.
All right.
I feel very bad and guilty when I procrastinate.
But you still do it, right?
I mean, eventually you get it done. Sometimes you get it done within...
Do you know who doesn't procrastinate at all? Sia.
Doesn't he?
No, I have my moments, though, sometimes. No, I really try it in most things.
You always do. You seem to always be doing the thing that you need to do.
Yeah, if it's really, like, of course, needs to get done, I'll definitely get it done. But, like, is it really important? Then maybe organizing my photo album is more important. And then just putting the playlist on shuffle.
Yeah.
And then Googling the artist. And, oh, I wonder what, you know, Elton John was thinking when he wrote the song. And then you have to see the live performance now onto YouTube. 2 hours later, you're seeing a panda learn Chinese. Like,
okay, slow down now. You're procrastinating right now.
Yeah, he is.
I don't like procrastination. It's not a normal part of my routine. I would rather get things done and do them wrong than procrastinate. Like, I don't mind getting it wrong, but it needs to be done.
Oh, yeah, you see, I'm terrified.
That's very impulsive.
Terrified of failure. So I would rather sit back and try and find ways to not fuck it up. Yeah. And then that's when the procrastination creeps in, because then I'm psyching myself out and thinking, I'm going to fuck it up.
Oh, my God, that's crazy.
It's completely stupid, but that's what it is for me.
Well, I think a lot of people are guilty of this. I don't think it's something that's very unique. I think everybody's just got to get over it. The whole thing about the wheels turning, whether it's in business or in personal relationships or whatever, you get stuck in that procrastination stuff, there's just no progress. Better to be wrong, actually.
And it really creeps into every aspect of your life. I mean, how many of us put off going in for a medical, knowing very well that this is something that needs to be done, and then you're just thinking, but what if, and then I can't deal with the what
away
if. No, I'm not going in, actually.
And then you end up with giant boils on your genitals.
Oh.
Just think about it. You don't want to procrastinate with your health. Get it sorted out. What's the worst that can happen is you might get it wrong, and, you know, it might be bad news. Better that you know than you have no idea.
Absolutely.
Can I actually let you know my current level of procrastination?
Uh-oh.
It took like 400 years for me to renew my car license. I finally did it, but the actual license is now sitting in my car, and I've cut it out.
Yeah.
But just the idea of having to put it through the little new disc and to stick it onto my window.
It's too much. It's too much work for you.
It's literally sitting in my
car. That's ridiculous.
That's so bad.
Listen to this.
Hi, I'm Nikki, and today we're going to talk about procrasturbation. What is procrasturbation? Well, do you have a report that's due, or an exam you need to study for, or some chores to do, or some errands to run? Say fuck it, and then go in a room and fuck yourself. That's procrasturbation. So essentially, it's the coming together of procrastination and masturbation for one sweet way to waste time. So, who does procrasturbation? Well, I do it, you do it, we all do it, and we have been for a long time. Huh. In fact, think of all the shit we could have gotten done if we didn't do it. Although there's no historical data to back this up, we strongly believe the first instance of mass procrasturbation happened during the construction of the Great Wall of China. It took 2,000 years to complete over the course of several dynasties, and if you were to hold a black light up to the Great Wall of China, it would glow from all the ancient jizz.
Oh,
and procrastination
God
still lives on today. How many times have you gone to pick up your car and the mechanic comes out and says, oh, I need another day? No, he doesn't. He was just procrastinating. So there you go. That's procrastination.
Well, that explains a lot.
Absolutely.
Definitely. I mean, especially the mechanic who says he needs another day on your car. Come on.
It explains it better than any psychological study or any, you know, scientist who tries to explain it. I prefer her. She must explain everything.
Thank you.
You people are so sick.
All right, what else have we got, Mabs?
Murder accused Christopher Panayatu's employees from the OK Grocer that he works in Algoa Park in Port Elizabeth came out yesterday in support of their boss.
He's the dude who killed...
His wife.
His wife, the teacher, right?
That's yes, his wife, the teacher, Jade Panayatu.
That's
yes,
it.
You remember the story. There was allegations of a mistress involved. Christopher Panayatu is accused of working with two other guys who he hired to find him a hitman to kidnap and kill his wife.
Yeah, because he was having an affair, apparently.
Yes. The school teacher was allegedly abducted outside her home while waiting for an early morning lift to work. The state alleges that her husband had her killed because she was a, quote, financial burden, unquote. Mm. Now, yesterday they were in court. Their case got postponed. But this is where, you know, the headlines get interesting. A group of five women wearing navy blue T-shirts with the words Christopher Panayatu in front and Innocent at the back said that they want their boss back at work. It previously emerged that Panayatu owned a 10% share at the OK Grocer in Algoa Park. He owns it along with his dad, Costa, and their uncle. The store's turnover was between 4 million and 6 million rand per month, and Panayatu drew a salary of 30,000 rand per month from the store. Now, according to Panayatu, he says that his 60 employees, you know, their livelihoods depend on the success of the store. And he says that ever since he's been locked behind bars, his employees are suffering because there's just no money being made. Even though he, you know, he co-runs the store with his father and uncle. Seemingly, he does most of the work. His father and uncle couldn't possibly step in and, you know, take over the situation.
Sheesh.
And then
talk about a long shot. You say the reason that you got to get out of jails because your staff need you.
Yeah, their livelihoods depend on the turnover that you were making every month. And
okay, let's just put aside crime and the criminal justice system and the fact that someone has lost their life and you're the prime suspect. Let's just put that aside because, you know, we don't want your staff upset that they miss you at the office. Imagine. What an argument.
During his previous bail application, Panayatu said that, well, it was reported that Panayatu was running the business by means of notes that he wrote to his family from prison. Okay. So this group of five women were there, allegedly employees that work at the store of his, and they were saying, it is a sin to be here. It is a sin to want that. We want our boss back. None of the women were willing to provide their names to reporters. Justice for Jade supporters slammed the group, saying that they were disrespectful. Jade's mother was seen in tears while at court after seeing this woman. The DA Women's Network also staged a silent picket protest outside the court to raise
DA,
awareness.
Why have I never heard of them before? Who's that?
You know, they're not as visible and as vocal as the ANC Women's League.
What are they called?
The DA Women's Network. Don't. Don't.
Is that like that DA Youth or whatever? There's like a DA Youth League, but...
Yeah, there's also a DA Women's Network.
It's not so important.
Well, you know, they just... And I don't even know what they wear. I mean, when you think of the ANC Women's League, you think of those green and black...
Those horrible, like... Yeah, those... Oh, those are awful. They almost look like the uniforms that domestic workers were forced to wear.
Yeah, so then the case was postponed yesterday, and yeah, there was just, you know, a lot of talk about these supposed employees who were there saying that they want their boss back because he's innocent, and clashing with a whole bunch of people, so.
All right, well, that's a terrible excuse, Panayatu. You're going to stay in jail. Don't fall for it, anybody. Guys, he's got some stuff to talk about. He's got some stuff to answer for. I don't see why he should be using this very lame excuse to try and get less time in jail. What else have we got?
I suspect that there are a number of apps like this in existence, but there is a new app that is now available if you find yourself in a situation where you want to recall an embarrassing text message.
Mm, I've always wanted to do that. There's often, not like every day or every week or every month, but in a year, one or two times you send the wrong text to somebody, mm-hmm. you just wish you could go back in time and bring it back.
Yeah. Because maybe you were drunk, because, you know, drunk calls and drunk messaging is
often,
just, it really trips us up. Sometimes maybe you're really angry with the person and you're too emotional.
Very bad.
And you say some horrible things because you deliberately want to hurt them and then you immediately want to take it back. So this app is called Protect Your Privates. I like the name.
That's nice.
It allows you to recall any message you may regret sending as long, this is the catch, as long as the recipient has not read it first.
Ugh.
Yeah.
So it's still not foolproof.
It's still not foolproof. The feature could spell the end for cringe-worthy declarations of love or those awkward messages that you sent to employers or coworkers. Maybe you were feeling brave and you've finally sent that your crush that message, and then you're like, no, no, I want to take it back. Any messages that you send that remain unread will also self-destruct after a certain period of time. The app comes with three settings. The mild setting deletes the message after 24 hours. Mm-hmm. The wild setting takes 12 hours to delete the message. If you set the app to insane, then the message is, well, it self-destructs in 3 hours.
Have you ever sent someone the wrong message and wish you could recall it?
Oh, yes.
Come on. Must be a couple of stories. Tell us about it if you've ever done that. Yeah. 0861-555-189. You could also get hold of us on Cliff Central, one word, on Skype.
I suspect this is an app Flax would find very useful for some reason. I immediately think of him here.
Everyone would.
Imagine you had like pre-drinks with your friends, and as guys, cabs are here, everyone set your phones to unlimited, or what's it called?
Insane.
Everyone set your phones to insane, and then you go have a mad night.
Right. And how long does insane last?
3 hours. It will delete the message. But again, it's only as long as the recipient has not read it first. So once they read it, it's tickets, it's game over. Users can add another layer of security by requiring that the recipient puts their face in front of the camera before reading the message, ensuring that the message is not shared with a third party.
Ooh, now that's interesting. I'm thinking that could take sexting to a whole new level. Because then a lot of people who are nervous about sexting would start doing it because you could see the face of the other person. So you know it's really just them. So what's it called? Keep your privates private.
Protect your privates.
Okay. Protect your privates.
The team behind Protect Your Privates say their safety measures are designed to prevent private messages spreading all over the internet as well. I mean, how many times have you heard stories of, you know, I innocently sent my boyfriend a nude and then we broke up. Next thing I know, my nudes have been leaked all over Twitter. And so if you wanted to, you know, have the nudes self-destruct, you could do that with Protect Your Privates.
That sounds like a very clever app. There used to be one called Tiger Text, which came out about the time that Tiger Woods got into trouble. and it would you could use it as a messaging app, and it would like erase your message after the person on the other side had read it. So there's no record of it.
Oh.
So if you're cheating and you send your girlfriend on the side, your side chick, you send her a message, then immediately after she's read it, almost like the blue ticks.
Yes.
Once that happens, it deletes itself. It auto-destructs.
So there's no conversation thread?
No. You can't go back on the conversation ever.
So if you were going to be snooping through your partner's phone, you wouldn't be able to find evidence.
No, you'd be, wow, honey, you haven't spoken to anyone since 2010. That's amazing. You're such a good husband.
Yeah, I really am, eh?
There's another awesome app. I think it's called Background Noise. So if you're in a pub and your girlfriend phones you and you've told her that you've just gone to like play PlayStation at a friend's house, it actually puts background noise onto the phone call. So it could make like friends playing PlayStation.
That is brilliant.
Or it can make like just white noise, something like that. Or like you're in the shower.
That's fantastic.
It's genius.
I can't believe I'm about to share.
It's so funny that we've reached this stage in life.
Mubs is going to share.
One of the guys that I was in a relationship with at the time, his phone pocket dialed me or butt dialed me or whatever it is. And at the exact moment, he was in the strip club.
Oh. How could you tell if it's strip club?
You could just tell. There were...
And now, Brandy! Put your hands together, guys. It's Brandy up on the stage, and Brandy is all the way from Middleburg. Woo! Brandy!
Hey,
And then eventually he realized that I was on the line. So then he picked up the phone and he said, hello. And I said, hello. And then the call cut. And then the next morning, he confessed.
Let me say something to you.
The next morning, he confessed to me and he was like, yeah, gosh, you know, I think I had a lot to drink last night. I was out with the boys. We went to the strip club. I was like, fine.
He had a lot of
I know.
Bitches, please.
He didn't even get into trouble.
When in the
but
background.
Yes, that background noise app could come in handy.
That's fantastic.
For a situation like that.
That is genius. You see?
Yeah.
I don't care. You know, Google, Apple, Facebook, Amazon, I'm not blown away by any of that. Microsoft, I'm blown away by someone who invents an app in order to trick your most intimate partner that you're not where you are with background noise. That is so clever. Genius. That person, I hope they're a billionaire by now. If they're not, they should be.
I wonder what kind of background noises you can choose from, because there must be a whole list, right?
You got the list?
I think they had that you were in the shower. I don't know who answers their phone in the shower, though. So that's a bit dodge. They had that you were, like, outdoors. It had, like, bird sounds and tweeting and shit.
I'm just bird watching, honey.
I'm just in the Kruger Park. But you're in Johannesburg. Oh, I drove there really fast.
And I think the last one was, like, you're in a shopping center. You know that, like, background noise of people walking and stuff? That one.
Here's an interesting story from Andrew. He says, in a rage after an argument with my builder, I sent a text to my partner calling the builder a C-U-N-T. But I sent it to him in the rage. 50K defamation suit plus 50K suit for damages.
Oh.
Luckily, I had a wicked lawyer that resolved it. Yo. So he sent the builder, instead of sending it to his partner, he sent it to the builder. And in the message, he was saying this builder is a it's a cunt. Shelton says, my friend could really use that message recall app. Yesterday, he accidentally sent a pic of his ball sack to our entire WhatsApp group. That's horrible.
Stop it.
And then Julian wants us to talk about something that we haven't brought up yet, but it's worth bringing up. Ted Cruz dropped out of the Republican presidential race, which means... it's only Donald Trump. Donald Trump will be the Republican presidential candidate.
Yes.
Whether we like it or not, Donald Trump is the leader in the Republican Party. How do you like that, huh? Just when you think you've figured the world out, then something like this happens.
Based on most recently the Indiana Republican primary.
Right.
Donald Trump got 53.3% of the votes.
Okay.
Ted Cruz got 36.6%.
Poor Ted Cruz. He just appointed Carly Fiorina as his running mate, and she lasted, what, 3 days? She fell off the stage, by the way.
Oh, dear. And was that all over the internet?
Let me see if I can't find it for you. It's really funny.
Oh, shit.
Poor Carly Fiorina. She calls him onto stage, and then she's standing there with his wife, and she obviously doesn't see the edge of the stage. And she just disappears. She disappears.
Shame. What is it about falling that's just so embarrassing?
It's fantastic. As long as it's not you, you know?
I know. When it's you, it hurts a lot.
Have a look at this, Mubs. This is pretty hysterical. Yeah. So here it is. And she's standing on the stage, and she falls down. It's not... there's not much sound, otherwise it'd play it for you now.
Oh, dear. Yeah, because she's basically in a crowd of people, and then suddenly she just disappears like magic.
She's fallen off the stage. And then there was this very weird handshake that she did, and you can find these. I tweeted them. Look at the weirdest handshake in the world, the most uncomfortable handshake ever in human history. When Carly and Ted Cruz try to shake hands. Have you seen it, Sia?
No, just the idea of it.
The worst. It's really creepy. So those are the things that everyone's talking about this morning. But this is interesting because it means it's probably going to be Trump-Hillary.
Yeah, because, I mean, is Bernie Sanders a threat of any kind to Hillary at this stage?
Well, interestingly enough, also at the Indiana Democratic primary, Bernie got 52.5% and Hillary got 47.5% of the votes.
Yeah.
So it's almost even between the two of them.
Mm. But remember, Hillary has way more delegates at this stage, so Bernie can't catch up, even if he tries.
Whoa, so it's going to be a Trump-Clinton race.
Bernie is going to have to go back to sleeping on other people's couches.
You know that he didn't have a job until he was 40 years old?
No. What was he doing before?
He was just slouching around, schmoozing off of people. And
which people?
He's a moocher.
His family.
Yeah. His friends. He lived on their couches. And basically, Bernie was like a hippie.
Now, I'm sorry, maybe this might be a bit too superficial, but if I'm voting, I'd like to know these sort of things about my candidates. were sleeping on your friend's couch at like 35?
Yeah.
No, dude, I wouldn't. No, you don't have my vote.
Right. I mean, how ambitious. Plus, I mean, we found out the other day he's really poor.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, normally you shouldn't hold that against someone.
No.
But it is kind of embarrassing that Bernie is, how old? He's like 100. He's got no money. And he only got a job at 40 for the first time. That's pretty insane, right?
I wonder what Bill is thinking right now.
I'm going to have that Lincoln bedroom all to myself.
That's what he's thinking.
I mean, I want Hillary to win just so that we can have fun with what Bill is going to be called.
Yeah, Bill as
the first husband.
The first husband. Sounds like a movie, right?
Yes,
Hillary Clinton as the president and her husband, Bill, as the first husband.
I'm back.
Where's your wife, Mr. President?
She's in the Middle East. She's busy sorting out wars.
What are you doing?
I'm in the Oval Office again. I love it there. And I'm playing my saxophone during the weekends.
Now, does he need to have any
David,
duties?
Here I come.
I don't think so.
He'll probably say to Hillary, don't worry yourself hiring the White House staff.
I'll do that for you.
And then 2 days later, the entire staff will consist of beautiful,
hot
voluptuous women in their 20s.
Or even, knowing Bill's taste, not necessarily that hot.
Beer cans everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It'll be like a frat party. But, I like Bill Clinton. I'm completely biased in his favor.
He's charismatic.
It's like I like Barack Obama. People get so angry with me when I say this because they're like, oh, but the drones that are attacking people and but the economy and Obamacare and a whole lot of stuff. And they go, you can't support this guy. I just like him.
Yeah.
I think we are going to miss him. He walked on stage at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. He walked on stage to, you're going to miss me when I'm gone. And I think we will. I think we're going to... He's no drama Obama. He just got things done during his presidency. You know, a lot of people thought that he would do a lot better. A lot of people thought he'd do a lot worse. I don't think he's got anything to be embarrassed about. I think his record is safe. I think history will judge him as a pretty damn fine president. And I don't care if you disagree with me. I like the guy. And I like Bill. So you know what? If Bill gets in as first husband... I'm happy for Hillary, because then she can... and plus, it wouldn't be a bad thing to have a woman. Flax, will you shut your hardy-dars up, please?
Yeah, control
Heaven's
them,
sake.
Please.
They just woke up.
Oh, okay. They live in the back room there with Flax.
Yeah.
We try not to make too much of a thing about it.
Now, it's interesting with the Clintons, because they have Chelsea, who's now all grown up. She's married and has her own family.
Yeah.
Now, do we go as far as referring to Chelsea's children or child as the first grandchild?
No, they don't get anything.
You see, if it was me, I would want to claim that.
No,
you would try.
They're not the royal family where everyone gets a title.
No.
It's just the president and the president's spouse.
The first man.
We don't know.
Talking about weird handshakes, says Greg, I had my moment yesterday with our CEO from the Netherlands. He went in for like a double twist shoulder shrug thing. I was like, nigga, what? That's what Greg says. That is so awkward when you're going to do a normal handshake and then they want to do a whole
choreographed thing.
Or if you go in for one of those and they just like look at you with a straight face.
Yeah.
Like, what are you, insane? Very awkward. What else have we got in the news? Let's squeeze some more in before we get to offshore money, which is coming up next.
All right. Well, we have another prison break situation. This time, no, not here.
Okay.
In Madagascar.
Ooh, that's not far away. They could probably swim here if you gave them a day or two.
A mass escape at that, which left over 30 inmates on the run. on the Indian Ocean island. The mass breakout occurred 3 weeks into a strike by prison workers. Media have been reporting that some of the prison guards even helped prisoners escape because they're apparently disgruntled about something.
Don't they always, though?
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Remember those two guys who escaped from that New York prison and everyone's talking about them for weeks?
Yes.
They got out because that woman helped them.
Yes,
the woman on the inside.
This is true. There was a mass breakout at about 1:30 a.m. from the prison. 37 inmates escaped. 6 have already been rearrested, but, you know, 30, 31 odd are still on the run.
Hmm.
There were so many versions to the story, but authorities, you know, are remaining mum on the situation because they say that they're conducting their own investigations. Prison staff have been on general strike across the island nation since April the 11th.
Okay.
They were demanding more vehicles to transport inmates to court. They complained that they sometimes have to take public transport to carry out their duties. They were complaining about wages, you know, that kind of thing. Standard strike demand.
So then you just release some prisoners.
So then you just release some prisoners and all, you know, you cause some kind of mayhem. So, yeah, you've got 30-odd criminals who escaped this week running around the island nation of Madagascar.
No way.
That's nice. Then you walk around the corner at the local spaza shop and some guy jumps out of the night and goes, I'm fresh out of prison and you're my first victim.
30-odd prisoners.
Yeah.
And you cannot tell me that, like, even the superiors didn't notice that. You know, one or two slipping through the cracks, no, you can sort of justify. 30, that's like a whole van, a whole bus.
Elson says, hey, did you guys hear that Tupac's mom died?
Yes.
I saw that in the news.
Afeni Shakur.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wonder, will her ashes be sprinkled in Soweto, just like Tupac's?
Were his ashes sprinkled in Soweto?
Oh, yeah.
Near your house?
A portion on.
Did you keep some?
Like a Tupac
what do you,
memorial.
What?
Did
what
you
do you
keep
mean?
Some?
A portion of them were sprinkled back in, was it like 2010 or something?
Yeah.
There's like bits and pieces of Tupac all around the world.
Oh, wow.
And Soweto is one of the places?
Yep.
Why, though? Do we know why?
Motherland.
Oh.
This is my home.
Motherland. Mm.
Okay. Well, I'm back in the motherland.
His crew that he used to run with in the day, Tupac, they claimed that they smoked some of his ashes out of respect.
You see, you just never know what to believe when you hear stories like that, or that some of his ashes were sprinkled in Soweto, and then the rest in...
You can't smoke someone's ashes. It's ash. You don't smoke ash.
Yeah, but you can put it in a blunt.
Sure, but you're not going to taste Tupac. That's weird.
Isn't that slight cannibalism?
Yeah, it is. I suppose. I mean, maybe it's even worse, because you're putting like someone else's stuff in your lungs. Think about that.
Mm. Have you guys decided what you want done?
What if it was his asshole that you ended up with in your blood?
Oh, okay.
Parted asshole.
That's... All right.
Have you guys decided what you want done with your body?
There are two options for me. Number one, I don't care. Do whatever you want. Number two... I want a glass case like Stalin and Lenin were put in.
Oh, here we go.
And then I want to be mummified, and people must walk past and look at me. And then I want someone to have put like robotic stuff in my eyes, so my eyes must suddenly open and look at them and freak them the hell out.
Now, where will this glass coffin be displayed where we can all come and see and look at you, Gareth?
I'll put it right here in the parking lot.
Oh, here?
Right here at Cliff Central in the parking lot.
Okay.
People can come and see. And then I'll freak them out. You can bring your children and you say, that man is dead. And they'll go, oh, no, that's very sad, mommy. And as they walk past, I'll go,
and open your eyes.
Is Duncan there? He was laughing at the Duncan parted the asshole thing.
Yeah, so you're laughing well.
Yeah, we're going to hear from Duncan.
Conspiracy coming up,
yeah, that's right. Yeah. We're going to hear from Duncan later on with his conspiracy theory. He's been doing research on the Illuminati, and he's ready to tell us about it.
Okay, here we go.
So, if you've never heard about the Illuminati, Duncan will fill you in.
Well, the Illuminati will probably then have something to do with Beyonce's Lemonade album shooting to number one on the Billboard chart, completely displacing Prince.
It's all the Illuminati.
Obama's last.
Forget about it if you think you know the truth.
No, you don't.
It's all a conspiracy. Duncan will tell us in a moment. All right, it's time for Offshore Money. Are we going to do that now, or is that cool? All right, brilliant, because... You know, we've been talking about this for a long, long time. It's also been in the news a little bit recently. And I thought it would be a good idea to talk to Paul Nicholson, who's from St. James Global. We've been talking about St. James Global for a long time, too. And find out about some of the things that you need to know when it comes to having your money offshore, how you keep it there, what kind of rules there are, what the regulations are. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Gareth. How are you?
I'm extremely well. Have you had a good couple of weeks? How are things going?
Yes, had a very, very, very successful 2 weeks with all that's going on in the world and in the international and local markets. And in particular, what's going on internationally with all these recent changes that have been announced in terms of tax legislation. So very, very interesting times we are currently faced with.
So let's begin, because I've actually got a couple of questions from people who've been listening. And by the way, if you want to find out any more about the stuff that Paul and I are discussing here, you can always go to stjamesglobal.com. They will give you all the info that you need. St. James Global, an authorized financial services provider. You can find out everything you need to know by going to their website. Can we start, Paul, by figuring out for some people? Someone asked what the difference is between an offshore retirement trust and a discretionary trust.
Gareth, I think that's a very interesting question, because I look at you know, historically, I've been involved in the international financial services business for the best part of nearly 30 years now. Mm-hmm. And historically, a lot of South Africans set up discretionary trust structures in various different jurisdictions globally. You know, areas like Guernsey, Jersey, Luxembourg, Isle of Man, Switzerland. And a lot of these structures in recent times, in particular over the last, I would say, you know, sort of 6 to 12 months, are now being seen by not only the South African tax authorities, but generally speaking, tax authorities globally, they're being seen as anti-avoidance schemes. So I think the whole dynamics are changing in terms of, you know, is your structure going to comply with local and international tax laws? Not only in terms of disclosure of those assets, but also in terms of the source of funds and the source of wealth.
Right.
So historically, South Africans have accumulated substantial amounts of assets offshore, which have been protected by these discretionary trusts, and of course now tax authorities are seeing straight through them. So the general trend globally is for one to set up structures not under a discretionary trust deed, which can be seen as an anti-avoidance scheme, but as a retirement structure, which can be seen as being set up for a very, you know, a very robust reason, like retirement planning, as opposed to tax avoidance.
Okay, I think I got a better grip on that one. How do you begin? How do you start an offshore retirement trust? Can you do this yourself? What's the best way of doing it?
Gareth, a lot of these structures are set up by transferring assets either from South Africa using one's exchange control allowance. So that's after tax money. Mm-hmm. So you currently have a 10 million rand annual exchange control allowance, which can be exported, or should I say contributed, not donated, big difference, contributed to an offshore retirement structure.
Okay.
And it all boils down to, what is the intent? Why do you want to do this? You don't want to do it to take those assets off balance sheet to hide them from SARS. You want to do them to fund for your retirement. So there are, you know, there are robust pension funds normally set up in areas like the Channel Islands, backed up by, for example, Guernsey pension legislation, mm-hmm. And they are being set up for, you know, for the sole purpose of funding for one's retirement in later years. So they can be funded from assets not only from South Africa using your exchange control allowance, but also from existing assets that one may hold offshore. We find that a lot of South Africans are still not quite aware of the fact that they are taxed on a residency basis in respect to their worldwide assets. So a lot of people that we come across hold assets in various different jurisdictions in their own names, which has a whole set of complications attached to it. So once again, setting up retirement structures, getting assets, existing offshore assets, out of your name in the form of a contribution out of your estate, saving you a 20% donations tax in South Africa, and contributing those assets into a retirement trust.
Because, of course, the government in South Africa are quite keen for you to save for your retirement, right? So they've made, you know, certain exceptions to the law in order to encourage people to save.
That's a very interesting one, Gareth. I think you're absolutely right. And I think if one looks at the UK, for example, where the majority of all of these final salary and defined benefit pension funds are in deficit. I was looking at a website the other day, and I think it's called cookham.co.uk, and it looks at all of these final salary schemes. I think 84% of these schemes are in deficit. And I think for this reason, most governments are encouraging people to take control of their retirement. And I think people are living a lot longer now, and there's more of a drain on most governments, you know, in terms of providing for, you know, for the people. I think we've seen that in South Africa. So these retirement structures, generally speaking, are becoming more and more accepted by governments around the world.
Is it necessarily something to have an offshore retirement trust? Is it something that only very wealthy people can have? I mean, could someone who has amounts smaller than R1 million make use of these structures, or is it a waste of time?
To be honest, I think it's probably a little bit low, and you've got costs attached to these structures. You know, we normally look at about £100,000 or currency equivalent, because it's probably going to cost you about £1,000 a year to run the structure and the same to set it up.
Okay.
So if you convert that into rand, that's a lot of money.
Sure.
So I think, you know, the structures really are designed for people who are looking over the years to, you know, progressively contribute assets from South Africa into a hard currency for reasons of diversification, for reasons of, you know, sort of asset protection, probate, estate and succession planning, and generally speaking, building wealth offshore.
That is useful to know, because I don't think, you know, a lot of people necessarily imagine that this is the kind of thing that is accessible to everybody. But you need to know what the minimums are so you can make it work for you. And if it just isn't a viable thing, then rather find other ways to invest your money. What about the ability to, let's say that you put a substantial amount of money into an offshore retirement trust, are you able to withdraw from that, and what kind of costs are incurred?
Yes, that's a very good question, Gareth. You are able to access the funds, and I think this is a very specialist area of expertise, and one mustn't look at these offshore retirement structures in the same vein as they would look at a South African retirement structure. They're totally different.
Mm-hmm.
Guernsey pension legislation is a very specialized area of expertise, but it is a pension fund. It has a retirement age of typically 50. One can access money prior to 50 by taking loans from the trust. But yes, you have full accessibility of capital at age 50. So whatever you contribute into these structures, you can take out as return of capital or capital benefit payment on attaining that retirement age. And of course, when the member dies, those assets pass on to future heirs through a letter of wishes, not dissimilar to your normal discretionary trust. So yes, full accessibility to capital on attaining retirement age.
So I mean, it seems like an obvious thing to do then. If accessibility to that money was a concern for people, that clearly is not an issue.
Well, I think that's right, Gareth. I think the other issue worth mentioning is that a lot of people have assets in their own name, which means that on the event of their death, they potentially could be taxed up to 40%.
Sure.
By simply transferring those assets or contributing them into one of these pension funds,
wow,
they completely remove themselves from that potential inheritance tax.
All right. Paul, what about the Panama Papers? They've been in the news quite a lot recently. I'd be curious to know how that's affected offshore retirement trusts, discretionary trusts, people who've been moving money around overseas. Has this kind of driven people into fear and panic, or is it something that has just got people thinking a little more carefully about what they do with these trusts?
No, excuse me, absolutely. I think, you know, if you look at what is required now in terms of due diligence on behalf of the trustees,
yeah,
you know, the trustees will not accept membership on one of these retirement funds without doing thorough due diligence in terms of the source of funds and the source of wealth. So,
huh,
you know, unlike in the old days where it was very, very easy to get, if you like, money off balance sheet by simply donating them to an offshore trust,
yeah,
you know, currently there's a very, very stringent procedure to follow. You know, where does the money come from? If it's inherited money, we want proof that a great aunt has died and left you money in their will. Or if you've sold a property, we want proof that the property has been sold. Or, you know, or the capital may have been earned abroad. So
in other words, you can't pull a Mobutu Sese Seko and funnel huge amounts of your own country's, you know, your state money into these things, and no one's going to question it.
Absolutely right. I mean, look, in the old days, money laundering, that's moving money from the cash economy to the real economy. absolutely no way. I mean, that's just simply not possible. And also bearing in mind that these structures are set up in very, very highly regulated jurisdictions, which prevents laundering of money.
But they are also discreet, right? I mean, for a lot of people, they don't necessarily want everyone to know that they have money. So even if they have to reveal that to the authorities, and if they have to reveal that to the trustees and the people who do the due diligence, they don't necessarily want that information made public, which is one of the problems of the Panama Papers, right?
Correct. Like, I think you've got a whole new set of legislation called the CRS, which is Common Reporting Standards. Mm-hmm. And it looks at virtually every different type of offshore structure. It looks at bank accounts, it looks at share portfolios, it looks at hybrid companies. Quite interestingly, retirement funds are not a reportable event under the CRS. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that they are very, very tax efficient from a South African tax residence point of view, ticking all the boxes from a suitability point of view. Any funds that are received back to the member in South Africa is a non-taxable receipt. So they're very, very tax efficient, and however, they are transparent.
Okay. Paul, two last things. The first one, how do you save yourself from all the duties and taxes that are associated with inheritance? I mean, all over the world, they find a way to take estate duties, to try and, when someone dies, to try and get a slice of the pie for a government here or a government there. How does it work when you have an offshore retirement trust for your heirs?
That's probably one of the big advantages of these structures, is that one can make the contribution and thereby getting the assets out of their estate or divesting themselves of the assets. And one can quite legitimately, you know, in their tax returns, say that they have made a contribution to a foreign pension fund. So in effect, what they're doing is they are transferring the assets out of their name into one of these foreign pension funds and removing themselves from what's called probate. And probate is the procedures that one has to go through when they die, not only in the country of their permanent residence, but also in the country where those assets are domiciled. So there's a whole set of complications attached around probate, both in South Africa and abroad. And also, on top of the probate fees, you've got the inheritance taxes, which these structures avoid.
Okay, and the last thing I need to know, do you foresee, because we'll catch up again in a couple of days' time for another installment of this, and I think we can drill down into the detail a little bit more, but I'm interested, do you foresee governments becoming more interested in regulating these structures, or do you see them taking a more laissez-faire approach in the future? Because I think a lot of people would like to have a forecast of that to know whether their money is necessarily going to be scrutinized more carefully or whether they actually are putting it somewhere that's quite safe and secure and beyond the reach of ever greedier governments.
Well, I think you know, on a closing point, that's probably one of the most important reasons why one should be looking at these schemes, because, you know, in South Africa, if you look at a lot of the local retirement funds, if you look at the UK, a lot of the international funds, mm-hmm. you know, people are living longer, there's more of a drain on most governments, and I think they're looking at these structures in a lot more favourable light and will continue to do so, there's absolutely no doubt. You know, governments want people to save for their retirement, and the other interesting point is that no matter where in the world one decides to reside, these structures have different trust deeds for different jurisdictions. You know, we tend to deal with people who are fairly portable, and they may spend time in South Africa, they may retire to France, in which case we change the deed from a South African deed to a French deed or a Spanish deed or a Portuguese deed. So very, very flexible in terms of how the deeds are structured, depending on where one might decide to live.
Paul, thanks very much for today. We'll talk to you again very, very soon for Offshore Money on cliffcentral.com. It's all brought to you by St. James Global. Have a good week. There we go. There's Paul Nicholson from St. James Global. When it comes to foreign investment, it can be very confusing as to what is and what isn't allowed. In fact, being a beneficiary in offshore trust was highlighted in our budget speech for 2016. And what happens to your overseas money when you die? There have been significant changes with regard to overseas funds, how SARS treats you if you're a South African taxpayer. St. James Global have the answers for you. They've been doing this for years. They focus on preserving and protecting offshore wealth, creating succession planning structures that tick all the boxes given all the changes in international tax legislation. Make sure that if you have money, you want to protect it, that those worldwide assets pass on to future heirs immediately without costs and without delays. Go to stjamesglobal.com for more information. That's stjamesglobal.com, stjamesglobal.com. St. James Global are an authorized financial services provider. You can always find out more on their website. Interesting stuff, huh, Mavs?
Indeed it is.
Yeah. Must be, you know, it's tough when you got $10 million and you don't know what to do with it.
I'm just thinking that I am accumulating all the knowledge I will need for the millions I'm about to make.
When you're very rich, you'll be grateful for this.
Yes.
All right. Quick message here. This is from Louise Haig. She says, "Hey, Mike and Sia." So it's not addressed to us at all, Mavs.
Oh.
"I just listened to all the interviews on Cliff Central. This was obviously on our birthday on Monday, of all the staff. I'm kind of pissed at myself that I didn't listen live. I find myself getting a big lump in my throat a few times over because of that 2-hour podcast. Remembering listening to the interviews, it reminds me that I'm part of something monumental. I've been here since day one, and I haven't missed a single minute of Gareth's show, and have found many other shows that I don't miss a minute of. Bring back Goombi." Yeah, listen, I don't think I'm not trying. "I like you guys so damn much, and I want to say thank you for entertaining us every goddamn day. Happy belated birthday, Cliff Central." That's from Louise Haig. Well, Louise, we love you. You're part of the family. And I don't just say that. I absolutely mean it. None of this, nothing here would be worth doing every day if we weren't doing it for listeners. If my buddy and I are sitting here talking to each other, we could do it from home on Skype.
Yeah.
Lying in bed. "Hey, Mubs, how are you doing?" "Oh, I'm fine. What's in the news? Blah, blah, blah." Come on. We're doing this for you, and it works. This is working, and it's beautiful. We've got to add more people to the pile. We've got to keep on growing. So if you know people who haven't ever heard us before, switch them on. You may change their lives for the better. Don't be greedy and jealous and only, you know, keep it to yourself. Share this the secret with other people. Who knows how many people you could bring closer to Somizi or Tumimorake, huh?
Go out and convert people like Mother Teresa did.
Damn right. And I will bless you, and you will have a beautiful afterlife if you do that. If you don't, I will curse you.
Oh. Oh, nothing's for free around here.
Yeah. Oh, here's, frankly speaking, Andrew Levy's just tweeted. He said, 9 a.m. talking white tip. Speaking to the fundraisers from the Renegade Report, what are your views? Frankly speaking, are white tears worth R44,777.70? 9 a.m. cliffcentral.com. You know that's going to be controversial. White tears. All right, can we go to Michael Card? Michael Card, he listens to us. He's got a band. And okay. He's on Skype this morning. He wants to tell us about this. Hey, Michael, how you doing?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Cool. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah, you too.
All right, so you listened to us, and I heard about you, and Flax has just told me you've got a song you want to tell us about.
Yeah, no, I'm in a band called The Apollo.
Yeah.
We've been playing for a while.
Where are you? Are you in Durban, Cape Town, Joburg? Where are you?
Joburg.
Okay.
And, yeah, man, really love Cliff Central and really wanted to get it on. And
awesome.
Yeah, this is cool.
What kind of a band are you guys? How many people?
It's a 3-piece rock band. So mainstream radio in this country doesn't really play rock anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what we've been doing.
They don't play anything cool and local. They kind of...
Like dubstep and R&B.
And they usually are not the first to break stuff like this anyway. So let me play your song for you in a second. Awesome. Who are the other guys in the band?
So the drummer's called Mark, mm-hmm. and the guitarist is called Paul. And that's pretty much it.
You guys do a lot of gigs?
We do. We did a lot more last year, and we just feel like trying to get songs on radio is a bit more constructive.
Where do you play normally?
The last thing we played was at Rumors, and it was Speedo Fest.
Oh, hang on. No.
Oh, Mubs will come to that.
Let's stay here for a second. So Speedo Fest is all about...
Yeah, so everyone just dresses up and puts Speedos on. The band's all playing Speedos, and it kind of just works out from there.
Are you guys in decent shape, or did you look like monsters?
No, we all have dad bods.
Oh, no.
Oh, dear. Oh, that's
shit.
Just...
All right, that's the end of this conversation.
Yeah, we can move on now.
Okay, so how would you describe the sound of your band so that we have some kind of prep for this?
I'd say it's like a bit of a rocky slash new age alternative kind of feel.
All right.
I can't compare it to any other band. I don't really know. Maybe you guys could.
I don't want you to do that. No, I don't want you to compare it to anyone else. It's your thing. All right. What's the big dream here, Michael?
You know, bitches in the back, bitches in the front.
I like that. You're honest.
No, it's just
money and bitches. Come on, tell the truth. Money and women.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
All right. You got a woman?
Yes, I do.
No, well, then what are you talking about?
Well, it's a dream, remember.
Yeah, but you can't do that when you've got some. She might be listening right now. What are you doing?
No, she is. She's going to kill me.
Oh, God, you idiot. All right, let's play your song. This is The Apollo, your band, and the song's called New Romance.
Yes.
What's the song all about here?
Ah, jeez.
Is the chick you're going to dump your girlfriend for?
No. The song's pretty much about, you know, when you get into a new relationship, it's all about this new romance, and you know, all birds are chirping, the sun's bright, and then a couple of months later, you know, it doesn't turn out to be as great as you thought it was, and
everything's grey and boring and dull, and
yeah, and then you meet the next one, and then everything's bright and birds are chirping. It's, you know, it's kind of a spiral.
Like love, ADHD.
Yeah.
All right, I like it. Okay, Michael, we'll play your song, and well done to you guys, and we'll let you know what we think of this.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
If people like it, what can they do? Can they get it somewhere?
So you can get us on Facebook at / Apollo Band SA. Mm-hmm. Or on Twitter, The Apollo Band SA, and I'll tweet Cliff Central, and if you guys retweet, that'll be really cool.
Well, I'm not there. You know what? You don't push your luck. Let's see.
Okay.
Well done, Michael. Michael Card, the band is called The Apollo. Here's their song when we come back in a moment or two. Guess who's here, Mubs? Jason Goliath.
Yay.
Uh-huh. Very keen to speak to him. He's got a brand new stand-up comedy show in association with Mnet. It's called The National Comics Party, featuring four of South Africa's top comedians. They've got Jason Goliath, they've got Skumba Hlophe, Skulk Besaidnoot, and even Conrad Koch. The show will be filmed live at the Lyric Theatre in Gold Reef City, 6 and 7 May, and will be available on DSTV's box office thereafter. So we'll speak to Jason. He's been a guest here before. We love talking to him. And we'll find out what this whole show's all about. You happy with that?
Yeah, sounds good.
Just give me the thumbs up. I'll do what you want.
Let's go.
All right. I was worried you're going to get the thumbs down, then I have to say to Jason, you've got to go. All right, here's the song from The Apollo. If you like it, you can find them on The Apollo Band on Facebook, and we will retweet, so you can follow them there as well. Nice song. Let's take a listen.
CliffCentral.com.